right up, ladies and gentlemen. What we got here is the greatest show on earth. What we got here is Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. Howdy! I'm Amelia Dalton, and this week I have an extra awesome fish fry coming to you from the 2017 World Maker Faire in New York City. Fish Fry special correspondent Laura Morris has a special selection of what we are calling the coolest stuff at Maker Faire this year. Yeah, I know. Clever title, that. So, without further ado, let's get started. Oh, and one last thing. Just so we're on the same page, Maker Faire is a dynamic, noisy environment. So, keep that in mind. Let's start off big. But how big? How about semi-fab in your own home big? All right. Until the power company gets wind of it and thinks you're up to no good. Mm-hmm. Well, Sam Zaloof built his own semiconductor fab in his house. So let's listen in.
We're at World Maker Faire with Sam Zaloof. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
So you've got a home semiconductor fab.
Yeah.
What the heck? Tell us about how it works.
All right. Sure. So I have a collection of a few projects here at Maker Faire, mostly related to semiconductor stuff. I got into this about a year ago. All my life been building stuff, taking things apart, but a year ago was where the semiconductor stuff started. It seemed like something really interesting to try to pursue at home. It had been explored a little bit. Some people have made transistors and really basic devices in the garage, but I wanted to see if I can take it a few steps further. So I acquired a good amount of equipment, mostly from eBay, and what I couldn't find on eBay, I built myself or found other ways to get broken, obsolete equipment. I built a number of vacuum chambers for processes like sputtering and thermal evaporation. I design and make my own chips now, so I'm able to make stuff 1 micron feature size. So it's 70s and 80s technology level here.
Yeah,
it's good enough for me.
Tell us about some of the things you've made.
Sure. So I started a year ago. It took me about 3 months of reading old patents and watching some YouTube videos, lectures, sorts of a thing, to make a transistor. I finally made an N-channel MOSFET on silicon. It's very big. About 2 millimeter process size, you would call it. So the characteristics are quite bad, but it proved that it's possible to do this. That was kind of getting my foot in the door. And from there, I've spent all of my free time since then building vacuum chambers. I acquired an electron microscope off eBay, broken and used, being trashed by university. I fixed it up, about 3 months of work, and I now use that to inspect my devices. I made a maskless photolithography system. Like I said, I can go down to 1 micron. The lithography system is actually good down to 0.25 micron, theoretically diffraction limited to that. But I have to dope everything through diffusion instead of ion implantation. So that's limited to around a micron or so.
So you and your home probably don't have the budget of like a TSMC. How
not quite, yeah.
Practical and accessible is this for people who want to make semiconductors at home?
Well, if you're thrifty and you're willing to fix up some old gear, it's very much so in reach. And I didn't expect it to be like this, but if you take a few minutes searching eBay, you can see there's a lot out there. And maybe not all of it works right away, but if you're willing to take a few risks, buy some old equipment, fix it up, you know, get a lathe, get a bridge port and a drill press, and make some of your own vacuum chamber parts, that sort of a thing. So I'm doing all of this out of my garage, my parents' garage, basically. And I haven't quite reached my goal. I've made collections of transistors, some simple logic gates, and some very simple things. Right now, it's all NMOS and PMOS. I don't have a CMOS process out yet, so I'm working toward making an Intel 4004, 10-micron process, first microprocessor in 1969 or 1970. So that's going to be the first really big milestone, and hopefully it's soon.
Thank you so much for taking the time, and
yeah,
I hope you have a good rest of Maker Faire.
Yeah, thanks. Really nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you.
Next up, we're tackling the age-old question, how can Wi-Fi-enabled sandals save the world from nefarious hackers? Yeah, sounds kind of crazy, but it's true. Let's go.
I'm here at World Maker Faire with Becky Button. Can you just tell us about the project you're showing here?
Okay, so for my project at Maker Faire, I have embedded a Adafruit Feather Huzzah inside a 3D printed sandal. And basically what I can do from my sandal is I can kick people off the Wi-Fi.
So tell us a little bit more in detail how that works.
Okay, so basically there's a well-known vulnerability in older Wi-Fi protocols, the 802.11 protocol, and pretty much all the devices are protected against this, and this encrypts the deauthentication attacks. But the problem is that most access points are not protected against this. When you send deauthentication packets, it's usually not encrypted. So it's something with the manufacturer, it's just they're not doing this ahead of time for some reason. So I did this project mostly to make people aware of this vulnerability and make sure that maybe we should be protecting against this.
So how do you get from I'm going to make shoes to I'm going to kick people off Wi-Fi networks? What's the connection there?
Twitter. As with all great things, it happened on Twitter. There's a very prolific Chinese hacker named Naomi Wu, and she's made so many hacker projects. She made this pen testing shoe, which in her heel, she had a very heavy hitting Wi-Fi hacking project. She had this Raspberry Pi. They would like record the keys that were logged. She had lock picking set in there. Like, she had all this crazy stuff in her heels. So I guess the logical progression is that you put a deauthenticator in your sandals.
What other projects are you thinking about going to next?
Okay, so there's one thing that's really near and dear to my heart is the maker movement. It has this capability of solving so many problems, from like very personalized medical devices to, you know, guides for surgery. So I've been working on this project. It's called the Global Maker Initiative, and I basically have created a hardware kit and a bunch of projects that can be made with this kit. And I've made things like UV water purifier, a haptic feedback device for the blind, this prosthetic that's really cheap. It's myoelectric as well. And I've made a water disturber. Big problem is that, you know, mosquitoes carry a lot of diseases. So I've made this device that keeps the water disturbed because mosquitoes don't like to breed in disturbed waters. And also, I've been really into like machine learning. Like, I'm excited about machine learning and where it's going right now. So I recently got like an Android Things kit, and I think my next big project is going to be like doing some sort of assistive tech robot that uses machine learning, maybe to guide someone in a grocery store or something like that.
So like you said, all the greatest ideas start on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you have a great Twitter handle. Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me. I'm at Einstein Unicorn on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us at Maker Faire.
Oh, it's no problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Here on Fish Fry, we have talked about self-driving cars for years. But not once have we discussed a self-driving kayak. Until now, that is.
I'm here at World Maker Faire with Leo Magliola.
Hi.
So tell us about the project you brought to Maker Faire.
Yeah, so I brought my 8th grade project, which is an autonomous kayak. Basically what I did is I took an old kayak that I had outgrown, and my dad challenged me to get it to go to an island that's about 7 miles offshore.
Cool. So talk us through the design process for your kayak, from having that idea, working through the challenges, to getting it out to the island.
Yeah, so basically we started with just a thought phase, I'll call it. And we really just tried to anticipate what challenges we were going to face during the project and try to foresee some issues that we maybe wouldn't be able to solve in the future, or some ways to solve issues we might face in the future. Next, we went to like a prototyping phase. I learned how to use Fusion 360. We did some design in there. We did some 3D printing, some laser cutting of different test components. Really, we tried to make sure everything kind of made sense with the kayak. So we wanted a rudder to not be too big or too small and things like that. Then we sort of went to a build phase where we tried to fabricate out of metal the parts we had designed in Fusion. And we went to the Port City Makerspace, which is like a community workspace where they have all sorts of tools. We welded, we cut metal, all sorts of different things. And then we went to the phase where we kind of put everything together. And that's also when we started to do our electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started the project, I really had no knowledge of Arduino. I didn't know anything about power relays or stepper motor controllers or really how to program anything. And so I sort of learned how to do all those different things. So in the hardware stack in the computer, we have an Arduino Uno with a GPS shield from Adafruit, 2 consecutive power relays, 2 stepper motor controllers for redundancy. And those control a 12-volt DC electric trolling motor and a stepper motor, which turns our rudder. So that was kind of like the process we went through to try to get everything to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did all of our coding, which took us a very long time. That was definitely the hardest part of the project. We had a lot of failures. One time we did a scratch simulation and we drew a line from the initial position of the kayak to our island, which we just added as a little thing in the sketch. And then we just had the kayak, when it was on one side of the line, turn toward the line. When it was on the other side, turn the other way to turn toward the line. But the unforeseen result was that it does infinite circles once it goes far enough, because the error builds up. And then another time, when we were heading due north in the code, it would divide by zero because of degrees going from 360 degrees to zero, and numbers don't really like that very much. So when we were heading due north, we would end up dividing by zero, which crashed the Arduino a couple of times, which was pretty confusing until we figured that out. So we probably had to rewrite the code a couple of different times. Currently, it works by taking your position now, latitude and longitude, and your position a few seconds from now, and it draws a line between the two points, and then it knows its end destination, and using the rudder, it manipulates that line by turning. So actually, I've gotten the question a lot, do you have to worry about wind and current in the code? And I actually don't. Because of the way the GPS works, we don't have a magnetometer or a compass, so we don't know what direction the kayak is pointing. We only know which direction it's traveling. So those things are automatically factored into the code, which is actually really helpful if you're me.
So this was your eighth grade project. What's next for you? What's the next thing you're making?
Yeah, so this year, I guess, we hope to make an ocean glider, which is, if you're not familiar, a submersible that's about 5-6 feet long, and it gives itself slightly negative buoyancy, and it's got wings, so it glides down just as if you were in an aircraft and you cut the power, you would glide down, and then pumps out a little bit of water and has slightly positive buoyancy, and it glides up just as if you were in an aircraft and gravity was backwards. And so it's a very efficient way of traveling because you don't even need, once you're moving, you don't need a propeller or anything because you just use gravity and then you use buoyancy to travel through the water. And these things, the ones professionals use for like ocean mapping or whatever purpose, they can go hundreds of miles on a single charge.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck with your new project.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
You know this is just the tip of the Maker iceberg, right? Oh yeah, we have so much more coverage just waiting for you. I would highly recommend checking out Kevin Morris's feature article entitled The Bright, Bright Future of Electronic Engineering, EE Journal's Editor's Choices for World Maker Faire 2017, and Laura Morris's feature article entitled Missing the Mark on Makers. How should big technology companies approach makers? You can read both of these articles by heading on over to eejournal.com. They will be up on top and in the center of the front page. So maybe you're not a maker extraordinaire, but you probably know the pain of backplane design. Then also, you're probably very aware that today's faster backplane speeds need faster connectors. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled High-Speed Backplane Connectors Drive 56 Gigabits and Beyond, I sit down with Matthew Burns from Samtech and talk about the newest, fastest backplane connectors available. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/eejournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can also subscribe to our EEJournal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 6th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.